couch of potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new remake of Dumbo, Hotel Mumbai, The Beach Bum, Unplanned, and a look back at the pre-Beatles film, Backbeat. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Aquaman and someone to watch over me. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First piece of news is the big announcement that happened this week through Apple and talking about doing Apple TV Plus. The thing I noticed about this with Apple TV Plus, it was very vague. And I know a lot of people are murmuring about this, that the promise that Apple TV Plus is giving, it's either stuff we've already got, like great original programming on a streaming service. Well, there's great shows on and movies on Netflix and on Amazon and on Hulu. So we already have that. And then they're like, well, you can pick and choose and buy add-on subscriptions. Well, you have that with Amazon and also Hulu. If you look at what Apple has been innovative about, the real revolutionary stuff that Apple has done has been hard physical products. The Macintosh computer, the iPod, the iPhone. Yeah, there have been flops out there in the past, but the whole point is that when Apple has done great things, it's usually been preceded by a great revolutionary piece of hardware as well. And that's not what you're having here. I mean, oh yeah, they're going to have an Apple TV box and it's going to be for Apple TVs, but it seems like what they're doing is they're just making their own thing that everybody else is doing, especially Amazon, because Apple has access to all the iTunes stuff, and apparently their movies section of their app you can do through iTunes, but that's just renting stuff. You can do that through Amazon. You can do that through Vudu. And who knows how much this is going to cost, because if there's anything else that Apple is known for, it is charging an arm and a leg for things and refusing to bring the price down, even in the face of losing market share. That's why the Macintosh computers had always been so much more expensive. That's why iPhones are so expensive. They're proprietary. And on top of it, Apple is saying it's going to have these apps for some products. But, you know, as long as if you don't have a Vizio TV or a Samsung, tough beans. You know, if you really want to grab the market share, go out and grab the market share. It seems like they're trying to do their Apple elitism on here. But the problem is, I don't know if you're going to get the people, unless they're hardcore Apple people who already have all that hardware ready to go. And having great content isn't a big deal, because we have great content. There's almost too much to watch anyways. I mean, unless you really, really, really have to watch it. I mean, look at like CBS All Access. I don't know how well that's doing, but the only reason anyone would want CBS All Access is in order to watch the Star Trek Discovery series. And maybe Twilight Zone, but we didn't even know about Twilight Zone getting rebooted until the Super Bowl. So the Apple TV Plus announcement is a whole lot of nothing to me until there's a lot of more details that are coming out, and until it shows how it's going to actually impact a user like me. I may have no interest in doing anything to do with Apple TV Plus, and that's okay, and they're probably okay with that. I don't think they need me as a subscriber, but I think I do represent a certain degree of society that doesn't want to get the new and latest thing. I mean, yeah, if you're one of those people who stand in line for hours when the new iPhone is released, then that's who this is for. But you can't build a company on just that. You have to have the casual user as well. And that's why once the iPhone came out, that revolutionized thing, everybody got an iPhone. But then people have been whittling away at that with Androids and anything else that has a smartphone technology and tablet technology now, if you don't want to spend an arm and a leg for an iPad. So we'll see. I mean, I think Apple does some great stuff. This may not be it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to hit is Unicorn State. It actually opens next week. And the reason it's significant is it's Brie Larson's directorial debut. Of course, everybody knows Brie Larson plays Captain Marvel. Well, now we get to see a movie she directs.
You have come to the store, Kit.
Behold, we sell what you need.
Unicorns? That was the only thing I ever wanted.
I don't know how to be a grown-up. My parents think that I'm insane.
Honey, what is really going on?
This is crazy.
The most grown-up thing you can do is fail at things you really care about.
You need to learn to love yourself.
Get out there and show us what you can do.
I will!
This looks exactly like a Netflix movie that is being launched right after a big hit by an actor who happens to be very prominently featured in that movie. There looks like there's some interesting stuff going on here, but it looks like this movie could be so horrendously cheesy and corny. And yes, kudos to Brie Larson for getting Samuel L. Jackson. I'm assuming she worked this out on the set of Captain Marvel, was like, hey, I'm doing this movie. You want to do this movie? I'll pay you, you know, your normal salary, and you're going to work for 2 days. He's like, great. Will you have a barber and a golf course? Then I'll be there. But Unicorn Store looks like it could be very corny, very cheesy. It's sort of that Liberty Gibbet, the manic pixie dream girl without the love interest. It's a mixture of that and the mopey millennials like, oh, God, I don't know what to do with my life. And that could get really long very fast. The problem is it's her directorial debut. And a movie like this probably needs a much more even hand and a little more experience to actually put something cohesive and entertaining together without it being schmaltzy as all get out. But we'll see. The next one I want to talk about is Dora and the Lost City of Gold, which opens on August 2nd.
Cousin Diego, you're so skinny and tall.
You are way more energetic than I remember. Dora, this isn't the jungle. It's high school. It's life or death. Keep a low profile.
Where did you transfer from?
The jungle.
Here's the scavenger hunt list. Team up in groups of four.
Hola, Dora.
Let me go! Hide.
You'll help us find your parents and the lost city of gold.
I am going to talk about the elephant in the room. How tight are they going to make the clothes on the Dora the Explorer actress in this? It's Isabella Moner, who is best known for being in, she was in the Transformers movie, then Last Night. She was in Sicario 2 last year. She was in Instant Family at the end of last year. She's a beautiful girl, but you gotta realize she's like, well, now she's, I think, 17, but she was probably 16 when she filmed this. She's a 16-year-old girl, and they've really sexualized her. And it's kind of disturbing. I'm like, wait a couple years. Wait, when she's 18, fine. Hollywood, sexualize her all you want, because then it's legal. But putting her in this tight little shirt, that's the first thing I noticed. I'm like, whoa, Dora the Explorer has boobs. I mean, that's the first thing I noticed, because otherwise she looks exactly like her, only she's got some chest to her. And I'm like, that's kind of disturbing. This is the same thing we went through with Hilary Duff. This is the same thing we went through with Miley Cyrus. They're sexualizing these kids way too young. And I mean, look, unless you're 15 years old, if you're 15-year-old boys, go see this movie and drool over the tight shirt of Dora the Explorer all you want. But other than that, come on, people. And this reminds me of how sexualized this girl was by Michael Bay in that last Transformers movie. It gets in the way of the whole film. Now, talking about the Dora the Explorer movie, this looks like it's trying to do a Jumanji thing, only maybe skewing a little bit younger, but it's not going as young as the Dora the Explorer character normally targets, because, I mean, it's preschool programming, and she screams every line, you know, and she's like, bridge, forest, grandma's house, bridge, forest, grandma's house. That's most of the dialogue of a normal Dora the Explorer episode. I do have a question about this one, though. Is Boots going to actually have boots? Because you never see his feet in this trailer. I mean, this looks like it might be fun, but God, Hollywood, dial back on the testosterone female gaze when the kids are under 18. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Hotel Mumbai, The Beach Bum, and Unplanned.
Because we can, can!
Shirt, too sexy for my shirt, so sexy it hurts.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's start off with the movie reviews, and we're going to kick things off with Hotel Mumbai. Terrorists attacked the city of Mumbai in 2008 with the Taj Hotel as one of the targets, endangering hundreds of guests and staff.
Chaos has erupted in Mumbai with multiple bombings and armed gunmen rampaging through the city. Terrorists have laid siege to the landmark Taj. With as many as 1,000 guests and over 500 staff trapped inside.
We should try to gather whoever we can. Any of you have families at home? There is no shame in leaving.
I've been here 35 years. This is my home.
There's a certain subgenre of action movie that's terrorist movie, and I'm not a big fan of these. These are basically an alternative modern take on the hostage movie. It is one of those ripped from the headlines kind of movies, but they have some problems. The idea of the hotel going under siege, and this is a true story, this actually happened, and it's horrifying to note there were these terrorists coming out of Pakistan who sieged Mumbai. There were like 10 of them, and they like hit all these different areas around the city, like a train station and public places, but then they also went after these two hotels, and the Taj Hotel is this major one. And they just went in and just started shooting people. It was like any standard act of terrorism. It was just a bunch of violence and killing people with no actual demands. And part of the problem when you get a rip from the headlines kind of movie like this is just depressing because it's horrible. You don't want to, who wants to sit here and watch people get killed? I mean, really seriously, I don't find that entertaining. I find it disturbing. And what's even more disturbing, and apparently this is true, I mean, the response was slow, to say the least. I think this went on for like 4 days. But, you know, like, I live in Columbus, Ohio, and they sent SWAT teams out for some of the silliest things. If somebody laid siege to a hotel in Columbus, they would have SWAT on that in like no time. It's disconcerting that like such a high quality place that has so many diplomats and VIPs, foreign VIPs passing through, the heads of state and stuff that go through this hotel, and they have such a terrible response and such bad security. They don't even have like eye holes. I mean, every hotel in America has a little peephole at least. You should be able to look out. Well, everyone's just opening the door. Oh, hi, terrorist. So there's I think things that I think got lost in the shuffle were some of the security things that were missing. That could have made this a more secure place. But also they put these characters as the people in the hotel. And I don't, as far as I can tell, there aren't real people. These are manufactured characters for the movie. And then they try and focus on, like, they have this family, this husband and wife, and they've got a new baby and they've got the nanny there. And of course you got a baby in a terrorist situation. So, oh, that's the easy target. That's easy to do. You know, scared for the baby, that kind of thing. Because babies don't shut up if you want them to, because they're babies. And they also have like this Russian arms dealer in the movie. And the problem with those characters is they're somehow more important than like everybody else getting killed in like a train station, which does kind of feel sort of elitist. You know, there's a scene where they go through and they go after you hit a train station, and they don't show it, but you hear it happening, and. It's like they kind of do these cartwheels to try and get white people in danger in this. And you're like, what about the poor Indian people that are just working, you know? There's a lot of heroism that they go on in this with the staff, and a lot of them got, some of them got killed, and some of them really worked to save people. But I don't think they effectively showed people saving. It was just chaos after chaos after chaos, and people making bad decisions, and some of the manufactured characters making bad decisions. I didn't find this film that great to watch. It's interesting. It's a part of history I was not aware of or didn't follow. So it's interesting to watch. But in the end, I think, I don't know what it was really trying to do and whose characters were supposed to be the ones that you were rooting for, because they kind of worked against each other. I'm going to have to say that Hotel Mumbai kind of sucked.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Unplanned. It was not screened, by the way. It's also unscreened. A woman rising in the ranks of Planned Parenthood has a change in heart in regards to abortion.
I'd be the youngest director in Planned Parenthood history.
You'll actually be in charge of the abortions at your clinic?
I have a chance to make a real difference.
It was like it was twisting and fighting for its life.
We are paying you to be a perfect instrument of corporate policy. We are an abortion provider. Congratulations. You make an enemy of one of the most powerful organizations on the planet.
Okay, look, I don't do politics. That's the whole purpose of the show, is to not do politics. I do movies, and sometimes you talk politics because they're in the movies, but I don't do politics. I certainly don't do abortion politics. Ever since I was a kid, I knew if there was anything that you wanted to have an argument about, is to get people who disagree about abortion, and no one's going to change anybody's mind, and everyone's just going to yell at each other and call people's names, and it's going to get ugly and gross, and it's an argument that doesn't ever work, because people are usually pretty fundamentally grounded one way or the other in it. And that's the problem with this movie this isn't here to change anybody's mind. It feigns being that kind of a movie because that's the character it is. But I mean, it's made by the people who did God's Not Dead, which is a total preaching to the choir movie anyways. And that's basically what this is. And they had to put it in the trailer where she's like, you're going up against one of the most powerful entities on the planet, which is supposed to be Planned Parenthood. And I'm like, really? Planned Parenthood is one of the most powerful entities on Earth? Forget foreign governments and navies and armies and, you know, the Catholic Church even. I mean, Planned Parenthood's got them all trumped. None of them can compete with Planned Parenthood because they do whatever they want to. They rule the world. And I'm like, that's kind of an absurd view. I mean, you can disagree all you want with what they do and have an issue with that and say that, you know, how can somebody work there and have a conscience? But to paint Planned Parenthood as one of the most powerful corporate entities on the planet. Forget Apple, forget Disney, forget Google, forget Amazon. Jeff Bezos, the heck with you. You don't have any power. Not like the stuff that Planned Parenthood has. Is anyone going to see this movie and not guess everything that's going to happen 5 minutes or more before it happens? They didn't screen it for me. So it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
The next movie I want to talk about really quick is The Beach Bum. Harmony Korine directs a film about a drugged out writer who has to put away the chemicals to try and finish the new novel.
You gotta publish your novel.
And if you mess this up, it's jail time.
Wish me luck. I'm off to write the next great American novel.
I'm trying to uncover my connection with the world.
Just follow me, my friend. Let's go, man.
Is he a good pilot?
Oh, man, he got glaucoma in both his eyes.
I covered this in the trailer park a couple weeks ago. This is coming out this week. It wasn't screened. I don't want to waste my time watching it. I think Harmony Korine is a slop monster. I don't think he's got an artistic bone in his body. He's kind of a perv. How he survived the Me Too movement, it blows my mind when you look at his history of banging his own actresses. So, I don't know. This movie itself just, it looks awful. I'm sure that it's a fun performance by Matthew McConaughey, and I mean, probably Snoop Dogg's funny in it, but Harmony Korine stuff's garbage, and I imagine this is more garbage. And since they didn't screen it, it probably is hot garbage, so it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I gotta go to break. When I come back, I'm gonna be talking about Dumbo and Backbeat. Go crazy. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the big one this week. And that is Dumbo. Tim Burton reimagines this Disney classic about a struggling circus that discovers they have a baby elephant who can fly using his ginormous ears.
Welcome, baby Dumbo. We're all family here. No matter how small.
You have something very rare. You have wonder. You have mystique. You have magic. Wow! Come with me. Together, we can soar on that elephant's wings.
I forget how many years ago it was that Disney started saying, hey, we're going to remake our animated classics as live-action movies. I know they did some of those in, like, the 90s. they did, for example, 101 Dalmatians, that did very well with Glenn Close. But they had this new resurgence, and I think the first one they did was Cinderella, if I'm not mistaken. And those were cute. And then they started doing more, and they just start churning them out. Now, some of them have done very well. I thought The Jungle Book was interesting just because they took a different angle with it. They did something slightly different. I was not a big fan of the Beauty and the Beast one because it felt in a lot of ways that the Beauty and the Beast was just a reshoot of the animated film, and all it made me want to do is watch the animated film. This year we've got coming up Lion King that might be the exact same thing. It might be a shot-for-shot remake. It just looks like it's CGI instead of animated. And then the Aladdin one, which the jury's still out on that one. Dumbo was one that got a lot of people interested because they had Tim Burton doing it. And they're like, God, what sort of monstrosity is he going to do? Because he's a dark, weird, crazy guy. And the other thing with Dumbo is Dumbo's a 64-minute movie. It's, I think, the shortest full-length Disney animated film. I think apparently when they first released it back in the 40s, the exhibitors wanted them to either increase its length or shorten it to a short subject. But nope, Walt Disney said, nope, 64 minutes, we're going straight to the heart. And it worked, and it's a wonderful, sweet, beautiful movie, and it's so simple and so simplistic. Yeah, it's got the racist crows in it, but it was the 40s. That happened. You can't hold those racist crows against Dumbo as a movie. So this movie, I was wondering how they were going to do it, because the big worry at first was, how do you make Dumbo still cute? Because when you start to make things full action CGI, how real do they have to look, and can they still look cute? Well, I mean, they knock it out of the park with Dumbo. He's adorable. He's really sweet. But somehow when it was told from Dumbo's perspective in the animated film, it was the Dumbo and the mouse. The mouse is sort of the audience surrogate. He was the narrator to sort of propel the story along, but it was told from their point of view, and you could understand all the elephants making fun of him for such large ears. But in this movie, when they say, oh my gosh, look how big those ears, first of all, the ears are not absurdly big. They're not like 18 feet long or anything like that. They're just a little bit big on him. But you look at it in the reaction, everyone's like, oh my god, what a freak, you're so stupid looking, how could you do Dumbo? And I'm just like, would people really have that reaction? It's a circus, for crying out loud. You're supposed to see crazy, weird stuff in a circus. And still, Dumbo's adorable. So that's a hard part of the script to manage. And that's the problem, is that when they try to manage the stuff that is so workable in the animated film, it just becomes weird and awkward in this film, to the point that the story, which, by the way, the movie's almost 2 hours, so it's almost twice as long as the original, but they don't make the movie about Dumbo. It's really not Dumbo's movie. I mean, he's in there, and I guess if you removed him from the movie, you wouldn't have much of a movie, but it's about these two kids who work in the circus because their father's there. He comes back from World War One. He's missing an arm, and he's trying to reacclimate himself, and his wife had passed away from influenza. So it's sort of this heavy-laden, tragic story, and the story's about these kids. And then it has this whole thing in when this big, rich circus guy, played by Michael Keaton, wants to absorb the circus into his and to get the axe, in particular Dumbo, the flying elephant. And, it's not really Dumbo's movie. And that's the problem. Weirdly enough, the film loses its humanity as soon as the humans start to take the forefront. It reminds me a little bit of that movie, A Dog's Purpose. I remember saying about that film is, I love the stuff with the dog, but boy, when suddenly it wasn't about the dog, I lost interest. And that's kind of what it is. If it was Dumbo, if it was 100% Dumbo, I'd love it. But it's not. It's like 25% Dumbo. And I mean, it looks gorgeous. It's Tim Burton doing his bizarre and very stylized production design, and it works, especially for 1919, which is when this takes place. So it fits in the design of the time, and it looks retro but futuristic at the same time. It looks great, but there's just something missing. For as much stuff as they cram in this movie with characters and story and action and kids running around trying to save Dumbo and it just doesn't quite work. And all these things, they shoehorn these weird things in, like, you know, the stuff with the feather seems kind of shoehorned in. The stuff with the mother, Mrs. Jumbo, that seems kind of shoehorned in. The stork seems kind of shoehorned in. The mouse is shoehorned in and not done very well. Pink elephants is shoehorned in. It just doesn't quite, it's not Dumbo. It's a Dumbo-inspired movie, is really more what I can say. It's still fun to watch. I'm going to have to say, though, I'm really lukewarm on it. I'm just going to kind of give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Backbeat. The reason I'm covering this is this was sent to me on Blu-ray a couple months ago, and it found its way to the bottom of my stack, and I didn't cover it, so I wanted to give it a little bit of a shout out since it's a smaller release coming out there, and it's a vintage release, and I love covering vintage movies, especially ones I've never seen. Even if I don't like it, it's good to watch something I've not seen before. Ian Softly directs this intimate look at Stu Sutcliffe and his work with the early Beatles in their days performing in Hamburg, Germany.
When life was fast.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music.
Love was free.
The best things in life are free.
And rock and roll was forever.
There goes Stuart Sutcliffe.
Wait!
He fell in love with a German girl.
Wait!
He could have been in the Beatles.
Backbeat. Rolling Stone says it's a thrilling spectacle that rocks the house. It catches the Beatles in the act of discovering themselves. Backbeat, rated R.
I remember when this movie came out, and it was it's the fifth Beatles movie. Well, of course, there's been like numerous people with the claim of the fifth Beatle. But Stu Sutcliffe was one of them. He's played by Stephen Dorff in this movie, and it's basically a profile of the band when they're in Hamburg right before they blew up. And it's when Sutcliffe separates himself from the group, because he and John Lennon were good friends when they were in Liverpool. To a certain degree, it's interesting because I'm not a Beatles historian, so I didn't know anything about this. But on the other hand, it also feels at times a bit pandering. It in a way, it's an excuse to get these performances that are very Beatlesque and to sort of play around in early 60s world before the Beatles became big, but playing with the Beatles. It's just, I mean, if you're a huge Beatles fan, I think it's probably going to be great. And the people who watched it in 1994, because that's back when it came out, I'm sure it was a revelation. I just kind of found it sort of aimless. And it tells the story of Stu Sutcliffe, and in particular about how he falls in love with this German photographer played by Cheryl Lee. Her name's Astrid. But there's no depth to her character. She's just like, hey, I'm pretty, I'm blonde, and I'm German, and I'm going to get naked now. And I'm watching it going, okay, is there anything to her personality? Apparently, she approves of this movie, even though she completely Yoko Ono's Stu Sutcliffe out of the Beatles in this. Nobody blames her for creating the Beatles, but they blame for Yoko Ono for breaking them up. Anyways, it doesn't do it for me. And I mean, I'm fine with the Beatles, but it does feel like they're just sort of playing in this 1960s sandbox without much substance to it. And there's just a lot of bickering going back and forth. It felt really aimless to me. But then again, I am not a music historian. I don't get off on that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's sort of like when I watch Mary, Queen of Scots, and I'm not a European history historian. So I'm just like, it's just a bunch of people in castles talking about who's going to marry who. And this one is, it's just a bunch of bohemians flopping around Germany, having sex and doing goofy stuff and drugs and smoking and drinking. So I've completely reduced it to that. So I'm going to have to say Backbeat kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the box office and the home cinema roundup featuring Aquaman and Someone to Watch Over Me. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's go from the movie reviews to the box office. And let's talk about last week. It was a phenomenal week for Jordan Peele. Not only did Us become a hit, it became a phenomenon. It overperformed all the expectations people had. It overperformed Get Out by a mile. It made, in the course of just the one weekend, $71 million. To put that in perspective, if you take out all of the animation films that have ever been made and all of the sequels or franchise films that have ever been made, it is the second highest grossing live action original movie ever. The only one to top it was Avatar back in 2009, made $77 million its opening weekend. Jordan Peele dropped Us as just a single movie with Get Out as his only background. And this is a huge phenomenon. This is a big deal. This has galvanized Jordan Peele as an A-list director in Hollywood. And he's going to have his pick of his next project. Here's where it's going to be dangerous for him. At some point, he's going to have a movie that's not going to respond as well with the audience. At some point, he's going to do a movie, and it's going to be like Lady in the Water from M. Night Shyamalan. It's like, oh, wait, up. People are kind of tired of your stuff. I'm not saying that he's going to do a bad movie, even. I'm just saying at some point, his movie isn't going to be a phenomenon, and he's got to watch out that he's not then crucified over that. He also has to watch out for the next budget. Us had a budget of $20 million. Get Out had a budget of less than $5 million. So he's had these two big movies, and he did kind of in the Blumhouse model of having a small budget, and then when it does well, boom. It's, I mean, Us is profitable now. It doesn't even have to recoup extra costs because it made almost four times what it cost just in the weekend. What he's got to watch out for is the next time somebody dangles a movie in front of him and says, hey, you want to spend $100 million on this? Because you made a Get Out open up with $70 million, you could probably get to $100 million. And then he's going to have a movie that's $100, $150, $200 million. And then even if it's $100, look at what happened to Solo last year. Made almost $400 million worldwide and is now considered a flop because of all the money that they spent to make it and develop it. So that's what Jordan Peele has to watch out for. He's got to make some very wise decisions going forward because his career could completely implode if he's not careful. I hope it doesn't. I think he does some great stuff. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first one I want to talk about is Aquaman.
My parents made me what I am. I am the protector of the deep.
In this trident resides the power of Atlantis. In the wrong hands, it would bring destruction. But in the hands of the true heir, it would unite above and below.
The time has come for Atlantis to rise again.
We must stop him.
The war is coming to the surface, whether you like it or not.
The movie that I was looking forward to so much last year, and I had a blast watching it on the big screen. I love the fact that we have now fully gotten away from the overly drab, heavy, dark, Christopher Nolan-influenced DC. Everyone says, oh, no, Zack Snyder, Christopher Nolan had nothing. BS. I call BS on that. I had an argument with somebody online about Twitter about this. An actual film writer who doesn't want to complain about Christopher Nolan because Christopher Nolan can do no wrong. But it was Christopher Nolan and Syncope Productions that made Man of Steel. And yes, Zack Snyder directed it, but I think Jonathan Nolan, who's Chris Nolan's brother, was involved in the writing of it, and Chris Nolan kind of oversaw it to try to make it a gritty, more realistic Batman-like Superman, and so that's how we got that whole tone. That's Christopher Nolan's fault, and Zack Snyder's, but Christopher Nolan started that game. They finally shed all that. They got that rid of that with Wonder Woman. Now they got Aquaman. Shazam's coming up. I've already seen it. It's fun and goofy and great and cute and clever. And it's a comic book movie. And it's not any of the dark nonsense that you had with like Man of Steel. Aquaman, same thing. I love the vibrant colors. I love the action. I love the humor. I love Jason Momoa's attitude, which is, you know, he's a big, burly, gruff guy, but he's also kind of a teddy bear, which is what's so great about Jason Momoa. That's why he works. And in fact, if you watch the special features of the movie, you see him bringing his kids to set and how he interacts with them and how he interacts with the cats. And yeah, he's big and scary and tough and 8 feet tall and weighs 500 pounds of just pure hard muscle. But he also looks like he's got a real heart there. And that's something that people like and people respond to, in behind the scenes stuff. Aquaman's a lot of fun. It was a great chance to revisit it. There's some stuff that's a little goofy and silly in it, but then again, it's a movie about a guy who breathes underwater and has sharks with laser beams on their heads, so I can forgive some goofiness. I'm fine with some silliness and goofiness in the DC universe, especially, like I said, after that overly grim Man of Steel push that got us into Justice League and then ended there. It's great to see Aquaman doing well. It's great to see Shazam going to be coming up and having the same kind of fun spirit. And this is, you know, you would have never been able to convince me that the big movies in the DC canon weren't Superman and Batman, but instead Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and the upcoming Shazam. Now, the Blu-ray has a whole bunch of special features. All these special features seem to be behind-the-scenes stuff, interviews, and I mean, there's like a dozen of them. I'm not even going to go through the list. But they're a lot of fun because they show James Wan's approach to it even early on before anyone had any faith that he was going to make a cool movie. It shows working with Jason Momoa, and it shows how they did some of the very tricky stuff with the underwater stuff that's not really underwater. And we all know it's not really underwater. I hate people who like watch it and go, oh, it looks so fake. They're underwater talking and breathing and fighting and shooting laser beams from sharks' foreheads. Of course it's fake. Those are the people you don't want to get involved in movies. It looks silly. Have you read an Aquaman comic? My God in heaven. So yeah, the special features are really nice. It looks fabulous on Blu-ray. It does lose a little bit going from the big screen to Blu-ray because the underwater sequences were really, really cool. But still, I'm going to have to say Aquaman totally rocked.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next Blu-ray I want to talk about is Someone to Watch Over Me. It's a Ridley Scott movie from 1987. Stars Tom Berenger, Mimi Rogers, and Lorraine Bracco. Came out on Blu-ray, I think, 2 weeks ago, so it's still a pretty new disc. So it's worth checking out, especially for anybody who's sort of like one of those 80s nostalgia people. In the movie, Tom Berenger stars as a New York City detective charged with protecting a murder witness in order for her to testify against the killer.
Okay, I'll be in 20 minutes.
I never saw anybody killed before.
Take the witness, a babysitter.
But I don't want her to know that there's any real danger.
You didn't tell me she was so beautiful. Michael, get off of this case.
She's my responsibility.
If you ever see me again, you never saw me before.
This falls in the line of the sort of like the sexy adult cop thriller movies. There was a big rash of these in the 80s. Fatal Attraction's one that got, actually, it came out apparently just a couple weeks before or after this movie. And so they kind of stepped on each other, and Fatal Attraction was a bigger movie. But that very, somewhat sleazy, I like to call them sexy saxophone movies. This one has that saxophone soundtrack, people walking down alleys in New York with the steam coming out of grates, and there's infidelity involved, and it's sexy, even though there's actually relatively little nudity in this. I was kind of surprised, simply because kind of the movie it was. It's not like I was dying to see Tom Berenger's junk or anything like that. But you don't, by the way, for those who are wondering. Anyways, it's also a Ridley Scott film, and this was before he became super huge, but he had done movies like Alien and Blade Runner already, so he was well known, but he had gone over budget on those, and they wanted to reel him in. And also, back in 1987, Blade Runner wasn't what Blade Runner had become. It was only 5 years over, and the movie was kind of a financial bust. So Ridley Scott's one of those directors I've seen most of his stuff. I'm missing like 3 or 4 movies, and this was one of them I was missing. So it was great to get a chance to watch this. I thought I had seen this when I was younger, but I apparently hadn't. I was 16 when it came out, so I was probably a little too young to even care. It was right before he did Black Rain. Black Rain was okay. But you know what? It's an interesting look at the snapshot of what people thought was sexy and cool in the 80s, even though it just seems sort of silly and almost Keystone Cop-ish at this point. I was not a big fan of this. What I have to say, it drags at times. Lorraine Bracco, who I'm not a huge fan of, I thought she did a great job in this. So she's like the best part of the movie. Mimi Rogers stinks as the sultry, sexy love interest, the woman that Tom Berenger's trying to protect. And this feels like Tom Berenger slumming it between some better roles. The Blu-ray is actually pretty thin. There's a couple special features. It just has an interview with the writer, but it's not loaded with the special features. And it has like trailers and TV spots, but that's about it. So I'm going to have to say, even though it was nice to see and it filled the gap of Ridley Scott movies I haven't seen, I'm going to have to say Someone to Watch Over Me kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That is it. I need to go for the week. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Shazam. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.